hello and welcome to Two Peas in a Podcast on a sort of a brisk winter evening, Trevor.
Hello, Michelle. Well, it's not too bad, although the weather's coming in, I think. I think we're going to get a bit more rain. It's most welcome, really. We're enjoying a cold, wet winter.
I love the rain, and honestly, it makes me very cross when people complain about rain in Australia. But you know what? I love the cold. I go for a walk at about 10 to 7 every morning, and I come back even after an hour and my face is still frozen. I love it. And there's even been crispy dew across plants. And no, I do. I love the cold, blankets, crocheting, the heater.
Yeah, I don't know that I love the cold so much, but the rain is good. I mean, my compost heap is over wet, which is really good compared to being too dry. And things just grow without irrigation, Michelle, hard to believe.
And particularly, like, you know, we're used to having to race out and keep everything wet and moist and make sure it doesn't drain. So I'm loving it. My ducks are loving it. I had them locked up with the chickens, which I told Trevor I would find a way to mention my chickens come hell or high water in this podcast. But the chickens and the ducks were not social distancing, Trevor, but they weren't fans. So I finally let the ducks out and they're having a delightful time keeping my garden free of slugs and snails.
You who don't know what the joke is, we're going to have chicks and ducks next week, not this week.
That's all right. I agree.
We're going to talk about what we said, which was microgreens. They're a new sensation on the restaurant scene. There are specialised home gardeners in what's called homesteading. You'll see this on YouTube as well. And they're producing all sorts of things in their home, amongst which are these trays full of potting mix and these sprouts coming out of them, which they sell to restaurants for a good price and for a good reason too. And that is that you can have food in the restaurant that is 5 minutes old. And we haven't really said that the difference between our gardening and commercial garden is the freshness, but microgreens are being transferred to restaurants simply because of the freshness. And I think the difference between freshness and non-freshness are the sugars. If you try a bit of fresh corn, that is, boil the water first, pick the corn, put it in the water, 5 minutes later eat it, you'll see that it's sweet and it has no skin. So all this trouble about finding corn that gets in your teeth doesn't exist. And it's the same with just about all plants. There's some sort of miracle that happens if you get them very, very fresh, as in foraging, you know. You just pick them off the tree and you eat them straight away. Well, that's a big advantage, I think, of microgreens. And they're so ultra fresh. And the restaurateurs are recognising it as something that's very saleable, and you too will recognise it if you have a crunch into it.
I've grown microgreens, but I bought some, I don't know, I was in one of the local greengrocers, which has got some really lovely produce, and I bought these microgreens, which were slightly hot. So they had an array of different greens in this tub to add to my salad to take to work. And it was actually really quite hot. So it was actually really lovely that you can have almost a salad in a container as well. So you don't have to just grow one sort of microgreen in the container. You can have those sprouting things. Do you remember as a kid, you'd fill the stocking with potting mix and you'd put the microgreen and then your mum would let you put a face on it and you'd put it in a cup. You do the same with an egg cup and then you'd grow hair on the... Do you remember that? That was so fantastic. And now it's just so trendy. But it is delicious. And I agree with you that a friend of mine often says stuff picked from the garden is still growing as you're eating it. Yeah. And I love that analogy. I think that is fantastic.
The microgreens are sort of gardening on a super fast, super miniature scale. They're mainly grown for restaurants, which means they're not a domestic scale. We have to consider ourselves to lower down the proportions because a whole tray of microgreens would go off before you could eat them. So we have to come up with some way. And there is a way. Back in the 1960s, 70s, which is a long time ago now.
I wasn't born then, everyone, but I was not born. I just want to point that out.
We have got a sprouting book in front of us, which was in America in the 70s, and that was all the rage then. You could buy a series of four plastic trays that were perforated in the bottom and had a sort of wave effect or corrugated effect on the bottom, and you could just pour water in the top, put seeds in each of the three top trays and let the water drain through to the bottom tray, and you could put alfalfa seeds and mung bean seeds and lentil seeds in these three containers, and the water itself would actually be enough to have them sprout.
Yeah.
And within 10 days, you could be eating these sprouts. Well, that's a very good idea, I think.
And I think you can buy those sprouting kits from most, like, kind of health food shops, but just a glass jar with some stocking pulled over it even, you can have the same sort of effect. You just got to make sure they're not soggy. I have made the mistake of filling them, upending them, and they haven't drained enough. Microgreens are lovely until microgreens go slimy and soggy, and they are disgusting.
Microgreens are grown in soil. It's debatable whether they're better than. I mean, people are claiming, and scientists are saying, that after 10 days, the microgreen has got as many nutrients as the plant 10 weeks on.
Oh, really?
So they don't suffer anything. Actually, what it makes you think of is, how the hell can a seed do it? How can a seed have so much memory that it can produce everything it needs to do, including flowers and so forth? But the sprouter kit is still my favourite, because you can get three different sorts and you can get a limited amount and you can sort of eat them straight away. The new microgreens, I think, are mainly meant for restaurants. You've got to pay for potting mix, or actually seed growing mix, which is not a really cheap thing. And you just chop off the top and you throw away the mix and the seed. Well, I mean, everyone can try it, but all they're suggesting really is you get a pair of scissors and snip off the top and put it on your salad and on your sandwiches. So put in your soups too as a garnish on the top. So it's mainly used as a garnish at the end of the day.
So is that like cresses in egg and cress sandwiches that they used to always make in the Enid Blyton books?
It is, yeah.
I had no idea until like literally 10 seconds ago. That is rather exciting.
Yeah, well, cress is one of them. There's a lot. I mean, the most famous of them all, the king of the sprouts, is alfalfa, which is lucerne. That's a little yellow seed. You pay a lot for a kilo, but you get hundreds of thousands of seeds for a kilo. I looked it up. It has vitamin D, E, G, K, and U. It's got iron, phosphorus, chlorine, potassium, aluminium, calcium, and sulfur.
Oh my goodness.
And it's 35% protein, and it sweetens the breath. So you can see that it could be popular.
So instead of going around with some breath mints, you could just go around with a bag of alfalfa and eat that. But actually getting the protein. So, and they're really easy to grow, and they are great to chuck through anything. And I agree with you about the sandwiches thing. The snow pea sprouts, have you ever tried those?
No, you do
have to chop them up. I have made the mistake of putting them in my sandwich whole, and they don't pull apart very easily.
How long were they?
Oh, the width of a sandwich. You see, you have to chop them.
Quite long,
you do, but that were delicious. And they're like these little boosts of, like, sweetness. And I don't know, I like things that are a bit different. I like a bit of green in the kitchen as well, so you kind of have it in the window, or in my case, on the dining room table.
Yeah, they grow in the dark as well.
Do they?
I mean, they've got a remarkable reputation. I always remember the postmaster at Birdwood when I was living up that way. He took me out the back of the post office, and he unbelievably had this compost brewing in the back of the post office. It was 3 metres high, it was about 15 metres long, and it had all been put through this super duper chaffer that he had.
And
you ask, why in the world was a postmaster producing so much in the way of compost? Well, he was growing wheat sprouts, and wheat sprouts have got the reputation of beating cancer.
Well, those wheat shots, you know, you can kind of go to those health food shops and you can have a shot of wheat. I wonder if you have a gluten intolerant, if you'd be allergic to that. I wonder. I don't know.
No, but at any rate, things like wheat sprouts do have an enormous reputation for health. And that's what he was doing. He was producing all this seed-raising mixture in order to cure his wife's cancer.
Oh, that's delightful.
That's amazing. And I'm also amazed that back in the 1970s, they knew about chia seeds. I thought chia seeds were a superfood of the new millennium.
Yeah, I thought so too. I did not know that. I actually, now, at the risk of sounding like one of those trendy new age people, of which you know I am not, Trevor.
No, not you.
Chia seeds are fantastic. I put them in some almond milk. put them in the fridge. So a couple of tablespoons, almond milk, put them in the fridge. You've got yourself a little pudding in the morning with some fruit. But the other thing I do, because, you know, I can't eat gluten and stuff, is that you have wheat, is that you do the chia seeds in water until they become like a gel, put in a whole bunch of fenugreek, some sesame seed oils, lay them on a tray and bake them, and you've got the most delicious, like, crackers for dipping with hummus or something. Chia seeds are supposed to be very, very good for cleaning out your system.
I must say, I've never taken them, but they are one of the new superfoods. So all of them are very high in protein. And you mentioned fenugreek. Well, fenugreek, corn, lentils, wheat, barley, peas, pumpkin, sunflowers and kale are all done as microgreens.
I didn't know that.
So the whole lot of them are just growing to about, oh, I don't know, 100 mil high or something like that, and then chopped off and added as it goes. So if you can do it, that's certainly a massive improvement to your diet.
I didn't know about the pumpkin and the sunflower. So you just get the pumpkin seed and put it in the same way that you do your normal greens. I'll have to give that a try.
Apparently you should shell it. You
know, shell it, all right.
It's the kernel, not the outside skin.
Not me shell it, but just shell it. Yeah. I'm going to say give that a go.
You can call it me shell if you want to do it a particular way.
I'm going to say try that. Yes. Now, Trevor, bare-rooted fruit trees.
Yes. I think most people love the thought of their own orchard.
They do.
Because, you know, you imagine going out picking your own almonds, your own apricots, your own peaches and plums and cherries, and the list in front of you is phenomenal. You actually need an orchard. So this doesn't really apply so much to the person with the minimal backyard. This applies to the devoted orchardist who's going to have all their own fruit and give a lot of it away.
I reckon if you're going to plant a tree, plant a useful tree. I mean, there's lots of, like, I'm planting a lily pilly by my front gate.
And how is that useful?
Well, because lily pillies, you can eat lily pillies and they're native and you can eat them. And I remember growing up and we had a lily pilly by our back door. And Mum would make this lily pilly jam.
Really?
I know, it was fabulous. And my brother and I would violently throw the lily pillies at each other and it was like paintball. I reckon it was like native plant paintball.
Yeah, I know what I like.
You know, and it was fantastic. But I think fruit trees, if you really, if you are thinking of planting a tree, think about planting a fruit tree, because I had apples for the first time this season. Like,
beautiful.
And they were so delicious. I was like slicing green apples, you know, the Granny Smiths, bit of cheese, and I was like having little sandwiches, but I was using the apple as bread. And that beautiful, when you made me the fruit juice, when you put the juice through the...
Yeah, that was the carrot and apple, yeah.
Oh, and the apple. So peaches, I mean, there's nothing like homegrown peach, my God.
Well, I mean, almonds are a beautiful tree anyway, because my grandfather, he had an almond tree, which as a seven-year-old, I used to love climbing, you know, and it was almost horizontal, massive thing.
And the olives, I know olives are considered a weed, but if you contain them properly, I forgot to tell you, Trevor, I picked my first lot of olives and I'm curing them and I have got a whole Vegemite jar full. But it was very exciting.
Yeah, we have done it. We have had our own olives. So there are a lot of very worthwhile fruit trees. We do have the bay laurel, bay leaves used all the time, the mulberry,
love
the kids
leaves.
Love getting their hands dirty. You can grow avocados. The one thing you got to remember here in Gawler is that we've got pretty heavy-duty clay.
Yeah.
And wherever you get clay, you really have to sink your spade in and throw out about the first metre square of the spade depth and then dig down the second depth. In fact, it would even be recommended you dig down the third depth, because if the clay is solid and there's no drainage, well, then most of these will die.
Okay.
So you can say that the ones that wouldn't die are practically non-existent. So they do need drainage.
Fruit trees do need care. I live in a street where there is the most... Look, I reckon this fig tree would have to be 120 years old, Trevor. It is huge. You couldn't even get your arms around the base of it from one of the neighbours, but it's never watered. So every year, my son, who is a massive fan of figs, gets to watch the tree sprout all these figs that are dry and useless. So if you're going to plant fruit trees, Like, invest in the time. Invest in going, okay, I might have to add a bit of water, but do I think you more than save on the fruit and, look, just the deliciousness of the fruit and the nuts. I mean, almonds, walnuts. Oh, my God, how delicious. Fresh walnuts.
Yeah, they're pretty good. You see a few of them up the freeway. And, I mean, I think nectarines, plums, peaches, apricots are all pretty easy, really.
Yeah.
Grapevines are not only easy, they're prolific.
I can tell you that. And my grapevine grows across the whole back of my house.
Yeah.
And as you know, in summer it's beautiful, isn't it? We sit out there and I do Christmas, Boxing Day, and the bricks don't get hot. There's plenty of grapes to share. The birds can have the top, I have the bottom.
And right now, the leaves are dropping off and making beautiful bloody mulch everywhere.
Absolutely, it's excellent.
So you do have to water, you do have to fertilise, and you have to prune.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the human race is such that they're greedy and they go to the biggest, best ones first. And so if you don't prune, what you'll get is 300 little ones.
Yeah.
You have to prune in order to get 100 big ones. So pruning is an art form, although it's pretty simply said in that you just prune them all in the form of a vase, and that you get into the structure where the main branches are, and you just have four or five branches coming out from the main trunk, and the hole on the middle is open.
See, my problem is my mum always told me to prune in the shape of a wine glass. I never pruned enough because my wine glasses are so enormous that my fruit trees would never prune back enough, Trevor, because clearly, but I like the idea of the vase shape because I think it makes it. And always prune when you're a little bit cranky with someone. I do. I always prune when I'm cranky or when I think, because it's a little bit addictive, and then instead of being annoyed with the person, you've taken it out politely and nicely and sensibly on the tree, and then you step back and you go, you know what, I feel a little bit.
But it does take 2 hours on a bigger tree, though. It does. That's the trouble. It's huge. So you have to remain angry for a long time. I don't really recommend that method. But if you take out all the overlapping branches and all the branches that are growing inwards and all the branches that are too long and might break off in windy weather, you tend really to remove half the tree anyway. So it's pretty simple. You just do those things. Anything that's damaged or diseased, you get rid of. Anything that's crossing over other branches, you choose what branch you want to stay. Anything that's growing in towards the tree, in towards the middle of the tree, you get rid of. And by that time, you're really taking away four wheelbarrow loads of cuttings. So it takes a while. It is a pain. And for that reason, I would suggest you probably shouldn't plant more than one or two in the first year.
How much have I got? How many have you got? My gosh, you've got way more fruit trees than I do.
Well, we had the local man dump about half a metre of soil over a lot of our things. So we were able to grow citrus. And citrus do have the advantage over all the others in that birds don't attack them. They don't like the citrus because it's got a big, thick, smelly skin, you see. So we had 8 citrus trees. I've got rid of 1 orange, so we got 7. And I think they're all good value. But whether you should plant the soft fruit, it becomes a question of birds, really, because we do have 50 resident sparrows and about, I don't know, 5 or so wattle birds, plus innumerable honey eaters and, you know, several other birds, including galahs and magpies and so. So we do have quite a menagerie of birds, and you'd have even more parrots and whatnot if you had all these soft fruit growing beautifully. So a lot of people are putting bird netting over the top of a cage that is enclosed in bird netting in order to keep.
I have seen some fabulous structures on my morning walk. I've been hugely impressed. You know, they've got the piping and the covering, and I think there's such devotion to fresh fruit. I tend to cover maybe half. I think the birds deserve half. I don't need that many.
Well, I'm a bit with you. I'm not going to put that much work into it, but there is a lot of work in having an orchard, but you can also just have one or two trees to do what you love most.
When I bought my house, the fig tree, I stupidly removed it and have regretted it ever since. But I remember as a kid when my mum bought the house we lived in when I was about 10, there was an established apricot tree. There are about two or three actually established apricot trees. And I think we just ate that all summer, and she made jam. And I remember one Christmas Eve, my then boyfriend, many, many moons ago, we moved into a house that had plums, and we decided on Christmas Eve, as you do with a small baby, to make plum preserve.
Christmas Eve,
maybe that was why our relationship didn't work, Trevor. It was perhaps not one of my wiser moves.
Plum sauce is not much better, I'm afraid.
I must admit, you know, Trevor, I walk past some places and I see these fruit trees and they are just engorged with all this fruit that ends up on the floor. And I think, talk to your local school. When I worked at a school, a couple of the neighbours rang up and said, we've got all this fruit, do you want it? And I said, back in the day when you were allowed to take children more than 2 metres away from the school grounds, can we walk over and pick them? And we would pick these fruit, and it was just fantastic. You know, the proviso was that we left them a bag. Well, we were more than happy to leave them a bag. And the kids loved it. Loved it. There's nothing like fruit from a fruit tree.
Yeah, well, I do think an orchard's a big part of a garden, but it's a big garden, so those with a smaller garden should really limit their choice. You do have that pruning, and I mean, if we can move on from that particular topic.
Oh, I don't know that I want to. No, all right.
But,
we've got a bit of housekeeping, haven't we?
We do, because the last podcast we talked about planting strawberries, but if you in fact planted strawberries last year, you're about to get the best of strawberries, and the second year strawberry is the best of them. It produces the most, but you do have to get in there and prune, and this is something of a controversial topic because, well, on Gardening Australia, one bloke ran over him with a lawnmower in order to prune. And another woman just sort of said, well, what you do with the runners, because the commercial growers put black plastic down and they grow the strawberries in holes in the black plastic, and so the runners got nowhere to root. But if you haven't got that black plastic and you're a home grower, well, then you get a lot of runners. And it's the same as fruit trees in that you can have 300 miniature strawberries or 100 big ones, you see. So you really have to come back through, chop off everything except the crown. I guess if you've grown strawberries last year, you know what the crown is. It's that bit where all the shoots come from. You have to leave that completely intact, and maybe one or two of perfect leaves that come from it, the youngest ones, and you take all the rest out, including all the runners. Now, that is pretty labour-intensive, and that is why it would be controversial. But I do think that if you do that and then turn around and fertilise it, I've got a new form of fertilisation, you know.
Honestly, because I'm sea-soling mine till the cows come home, but what is it now? What's different?
Sea-soling, very good, but if you buy these pellets, you know, these fertiliser pellets like Rapid Raiser and Dynamic Lifter, and you happen to have the old kitchen whiz in your shed, you can put them with a bit of a very fine coir into the kitchen whiz and give them a good buzz, and they turn out to be powdery things. And they,
oh, what a cool idea!
You see, the chemical fertilisers act instantly, right?
Yeah.
And that's why people put a bit of sulfate of ammonia and I think it turns green. I think, gee, it's good, but it's not, because it dissolves and it disappears.
Yeah.
And it goes into the water, of course, and whatnot. But if you just chop up these pellets, it does give an instant hit to these things, and it tends to work on seedlings as well, actually. So if you just happen to have not thrown away your last kitchen whiz, that's not a bad idea of getting instant reaction, as well as your seaweed. That's a good idea.
And if you do have a bit of an old kitchen whiz, just make sure you label it very clearly that it's for the fertiliser before you put it in the...
Normally you've got a better one inside.
Put it in the shed, you do normally have a better one. Mm. So what else? What are we planting now in early winter?
Well, I've put in peas. There's a lot of peas. There's climbing peas, which, you know, they are the snow peas and the sugar snap peas, and they're absolutely delicious, so they're a must. You can put them in before the... Well, we're doing this on about the 18th of June, but by the 21st of June, we'll have the shortest day of the year. So you can put them in on the shortest day of the year, and they'll grow fine. So you can put in peas. There are ground peas as well as the climbing peas. Broad beans too. We mentioned this before, and that you could have planted them early back in March, but you can also still put them in. You've still got time to put strawberries and asparagus in, although it would be nice if you prepared the soil 6 weeks in advance for the very reason I was saying before.
In the last podcast, absolutely.
Yeah, and that it takes a while for organic fertilisers to get into the soil and start performing. You might have something big in your garden that you'd like to transfer to another spot. This is not an unusual happening, and this is a good time to do that because basically the reason you can plant bare-rooted fruit trees is that everything's slowed down.
Yeah, that's true.
The tree's practically dead. It's only breathing occasionally, and it's leafless, and it's not transpiring, it's not losing moisture to the sun or anything like that. And so big transplants are probably the right time to do it now. You can dig them out, put them in, and prune them back fairly hard, of course, and not give them a lot of fertilizer, just a lot of water. And you probably have your best success rate that you have at any time of the year right now. That's another thing you can look at. And the last thing is you should really be using all those weeds. Those hundreds of thousands of weeds that popped up in March after the first rain and swamped every piece of your garden all at once. They have to be pulled out eventually, and I think it's best to pull them out one bed at a time. But as you pull them out, you should really heap them up, and you should mix them with some brown straw or manure or something, and you can produce a lot of compost out of that. And the compost is fantastic, really. It's wormy, it's
I've got so much stinging nettle. Now, I love stinging nettle because I do. I love stinging nettle because there's so many uses for stinging nettle. One of the big uses for stinging nettle is chuck them in the compost or a bucket with water and then kind of put it on the garden. So, yeah, don't just chuck your weeds away. Like, make them work for you.
Yeah, well, compost is... You're either going to love it or you're not. And if you love it, you'll have a good garden because it is quite a phenomenal thing in that it... I mean, I've got one compost now where that 40-degree heat killed off all the worms in my worm farm. When I turned on the tap, not only did the worm juice come out, but all the worms as well. So I thought I'd lost it, you see. Yeah. So the remaining soil in the three vessels I threw on the compost. But now... That particular compost got unheard of number of worms in it. And they're all looking remarkably like tiger worms. So there must have been a lot of worm eggs in that soil.
Yeah, that's true. So, Trevor, I was going to say next month, and it's still going to be winter. What are we going to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. What do you think, Michelle?
I reckon we should talk about chickens, Trevor, and ducks, Trevor. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think we'll have to give you that. I'm not really an expert on it, but yeah, they are lovely, aren't they?
They are. They are. What I want to talk about next month is chickens and ducks and kind of getting them working for you in the garden. So they're not,
that's a good idea.
You know, it's not just about the laying of the eggs. Lots of people are really anti-ducks and, you know, have lots of, you know, oh, they do this and they do that. But I, by the end of next month's podcast, will convert people to the point where they'll be rushing out and getting ducks.
What do you reckon? Well, you need a big pond, but anyway, yeah, I do think that everyone loves their chooks, and I love my chooks, so I do think we can probably do a nice episode on the animals in the garden.
We can, and perhaps even mention the occasional galah. What do you reckon?
Well, I think galahs are important, yes. I've got galahs, and also I think really that sparrows are important.
Mm.
And I've come up with a method of feeding that satisfies everybody.
Oh, so should we hear about that next month, Trevor?
I think so, yes.
So thank you very much, and we will see you next month.
Thank you as always, Michelle, and see you later.